What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome back to episode 154 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined for the 154th time by the Grinch who is about to steal Christmas, Joey. Why you hate Christmas, Joey?
I'm a lover of Christmas, though. Am I freezing on your end?
You're not freezing on my end.
Okay, cool. Twitch is freezing up, so I wasn't sure.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Good times. Yeah. The Grinch that stole Christmas. Here I am. You know me.
I mean, it's our Christmas episode. I don't see you wearing a Christmas hat. I'm clearly wearing a Christmas hat.
John, you know why I'm not wearing a Christmas hat?
Because
these notes are so freaking long this week.
That's fair. Nation, make sure you follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That's at the Level Up Podcast. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're on Twitter, why not give the Grinch a follow himself? That's Joey at Courtside King and myself, I wouldn't go Santa Claus, but, you know, maybe Rudolph. Rudolph's kind of cool, you know. Myself at Fiasco. If you're watching here live on Twitch, looking at my goofy hat that I'm wearing and Joey's hatred of Christmas face that he's wearing. Those handles are for you below those mugshots. If you're listening on a podcatcher of your choice later on down the road, they will be in the show notes for you below. And Nation, while you're at it, why not leave us a review on that podcatcher of choice? The Level Up Podcast is now available on Spotify, Stitcher, as well as iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. Reviews do go a long way to help grow the audience and reach new listeners. So when you do have a moment, we would be very appreciative of you taking time out of your Christmas shopping to leave us a slight review. Nation, tis the holiday season, and if there's one thing I know, it's that Sony is the most giving company in the world. First, they gave us cross-platform play, and now, in the very same spirit, Sony has announced that Xbox gamers announced something that Xbox gamers have wanted for decades. Yes, I am talking, of course, Joey, not about that new console, but MLB The Show is going to be available on other platforms other than PlayStation. Who knew Santa worked at Sony, Joey? Joey, what else does old Saint Nick have in his sack of goodies for us today on episode 154?
John, as always, Saint Nick has brought a lot of roster changes, so we're going to be talking about those. On top of that, a lot of new investments in esports, all different things from streaming deals to controller deals and much, much more. John, we have so many notes today. We started out with about 2.5 hours of recording time based on my feedback on notes here. I've cut down a lot. We have the bare minimum to get us to the end before our editor kills us. We're going to make it happen, baby.
Let's make it happen. But Joey, before we can even attempt such a feat, that is to deliver all of these amazing topics to all of our listeners in one night, we have to touch on our drink of choice. Joey, if you do not have spiked eggnog, I am kicking you off of the show. What's your beverage, sir?
Ah, John, you see, I will be spending this Christmas in a small town in Ontario. I got a 4-pack and I have another one I got to drink.
Are you really going to Canada for Christmas?
No.
Well, I was...
That was a pun. Come on, you know me by now.
Well, I do, but I was kind of hoping
you've been working too hard on building those toys over there, Mr. Elf.
Dude, I can't tell you. Like, that's... You know what? I'm not going to go there. It's a family-friendly show. We're not going to bring negativity into it. Joey, I am staying local because the only thing I really have is the fact that I'm drinking out of a Winter Classic cup from the Caps played the Blackhawks in the Winter Classic at Nats Park. But in there, Joey, is delicious, nutritious... non-alcoholic iced tea. It's been way too busy for me, as you know, Joey, before we hopped on here. I was AFK for most of the day, so I haven't had a chance to do anything, let alone get a beer out of my fridge. So I apologize for the lack of beverage, sir.
Wow, so no spiked eggnog on your side either. You have to make fun of me, but...
I'm the elf here, man. I've been working my butt off, you know? I've been building all these damn toys, you know? Barbies ain't going to build themselves, man. These new Xbox controllers ain't going to hardwire themselves. You got to make sure that rumble pack is working. Joey, enough about what I'm doing in Santa's workshop and the fact that you still hate Christmas, Joey. Let's get right into gaming and esports news. Let's go.
So on top of getting your Barbies built with John's help over here, you can also head on over to CSGO because, John, this is Counter-Strike global off-season, it feels like. There are so many roster changes happening right now. It's all over the place. New rosters being picked up completely. A player here and there for some other teams. So we'll just run through a few of these and then we can kind of give feedback afterwards just because there are so many of them. Kicking things off, Gen G is adding Soam as a starter and Sick as a stand-in for IEM qualifiers. It's rumored that they are targeting BM Tet as their fifth permanent starter. So jumping into the CSGO scene here, obviously continuing their roster improvements. A lot of different things to look at here with them in particular, just because they're expanding to so many different esports titles. But again, CSGO being one of the bigger ones out there, I like the fact that Gen G is jumping in with a pretty solid roster overall. Over to Virtus Pro, they're rumored to be signing Avangard's lineup, which includes Arden, Average Buster, Quikert, XD Sanji, and Jamie Pan. Again, I'm going to butcher these names this week. MIBR signed Myern. And then your boys Cloud9, that flag in the background, they're planning to sign the up-and-coming ATK Arena lineup, which includes Sonic, JT, Floppy, OC, and Six. I believe it's Man of the Match. So a lot of different moves going on here in the CSGO scene. This follows a lot of moves that happened a couple months ago. We saw Na'Vi make moves, Fnatic make moves. A lot of different teams really making moves right now, trying to catch up to that top. We've seen Team Liquid up there. We've seen Astralis up there. We've seen Fnatic win an event recently. It feels like there's a lot of teams really competing at the highest level right now. And now a lot of other organizations who haven't done so well are going in and picking up some of these other up-and-coming rosters. I really like a lot of these moves.
Yeah, so I'll be completely honest here. I'm going to give a shout-out to one of our listeners and good friend, Squirrelsoul, Most Fab Turtle, real quick, for giving me a nice breakdown on this roster that Cloud9 is looking at signing here in the future. Apparently, Floppy is known for saying just a random phrase over and over and over again. If there's anything Cloud9 and Cloud9 fans love is random memes that really don't have any like history behind it. We just make up our own memes. I believe he says Gun Ginja over and over and over again, or Ginja, or it's something bad. I don't know if it's bad, but like it sounds bad when you say it. But yeah, apparently he just rambles that over and over and over and over again. So he's going to fit in quite well with Cloud9 if this rumor happens to be true. But a lot of moves in the CSGO scene, I don't think it's a bad thing. Rosters do tend to move quite a bit in CSGO, but Cloud9, I think, is the big interesting one here. Cloud9, again, really struggling to regain themselves, kind of recapture that magic that was the Boston Major a couple years ago. So it's going to be interesting to see how this new lineup will play with Cloud9. So far, personality-wise, I think they're great, and they're going to fit in just well with Sneaky's cosplay and everything else that happens in Cloud9. Really exciting time in CSGO.
Right, and like I said, this is not because it's like the end of the world in CSGO scene. It's mainly because there's a bunch of teams vying for the top right now, and everyone else feels many tiers below, really. It's almost like an A tier and a C tier. These are those up-and-coming teams that have shown a lot of potential, but have not really hit the highest stride. Now with some extra funding, some better coaches potentially coming in from that funding, it gives some of these up-and-coming teams a chance, as well as some of these organizations who've gone a bit stale in the scene to buy into a new up-and-coming lineup as well, so really good stuff. It keeps the CSGO scene fresh. The game's been around forever. The esports scene has been around forever. But, John, it continues to grow, it feels like, and I think a lot of that is because of the reinvestment in young talent. MLB The Show, you hit it on the top of the show. It's announced a new multi-year, multi-platform video game partnership extension. This is between the MLB, the MLB Players Association. I think it's a Sony studio in San Diego that developed it, if I remember correctly. PlayStation obviously is a big player in this deal, and then potentially, we don't have the names out there yet, but we're assuming Microsoft is probably involved, both the Xbox and the PC, and then Nintendo as well with the Nintendo Switch. So the biggest thing here for me, John, is this is the MLB kind of forcing this deal, in my opinion. This is them saying, we want to continue to jump into esports. We see the NFL doing it. We see MLS doing it. We see the NHL potentially doing it. What can we do to move forward with the MLB? Not only that, but this can help attract younger audience members, which we've always heard the joke or the phrase, MLB is dying. It's got older people coming to games. The young people are not necessarily there as often. This is another way to tap into that younger audience potentially. I really like this move overall. When you look at MLB games, I was a big player in MLB I guess it was like 2K8 at the time was the one I played a lot on. I was an admin on Game Battles. I really enjoyed the style, but it died out. I think 2K9 or 2K10 or something around there was the last one. Then from there, it was just always the show. Xbox gamers had nothing to play. PC gamers had nothing to play. It felt like it was just MLB the Show on PlayStation. It was a huge exclusive over there in the sports world. Now, finally coming to other platforms, I think this not only opens the door for those MLB esports, but also just Major League Baseball gaming again in general.
Yeah, and you know, I'll play a little Grinch on this. We're not gonna say devil's advocate here. You know, I don't think making it available on other platforms is really gonna hinder or help. It's esports scene because like you see console exclusives when it comes to a lot of esport leagues. Like, you know, EMLS is played exclusively on PlayStation. So if you're an Xbox player, you have to play on PlayStation. Now, I do agree it's going to open up the player base, allow more players to play the game, and that's going to take my biggest wild card away from Xbox, you know, players out there saying it's like, oh, that's why you get a PlayStation because you play MLB The Show. And to be completely honest, you know, before the show even was out there, Joe, you had, you know, the 2K series. You also had the EA Sports version of MLB. I believe it was EA Sports MVP Baseball. And, you know, both of those died when MLB signed that exclusive contract with Sony. So it was interesting because MVP Baseball started a lot of that unique experiences that you now see in the show, like minor league teams in there, the road to the show. You know, Sony really hit on that with MLB The Show, where they allowed you to start in the minors and work your way up to the show, like career modes and a lot of the other titles that EA Sports does. So that was something that over time they were able to build and was able to build that hype around. So if you're a sports gamer fan and you wanted to play baseball, you had to get a PlayStation. I mean, there was no, like you said, Joey, there's no other option on Xbox. So this is massive news for baseball fans that are also gamers that want to play on an Xbox, on a PlayStation. And then, yeah, it's definitely going to help grow the player base to hopefully maybe one day develop an esports scene that could be supportive of baseball, kind of like the way we see the NBA 2K League is with the NBA and even Madden is with the NFL.
If my sources are correct, we will see an esports scene in 2021, which is also when the game is set to arrive per multi-console. So it should be on all of the consoles by 2021. It might just be a test league at that point, and then by 2022, the official launch. But I am hearing that supposedly around that time frame is when we're going to see a Major League Baseball league for esports. Again, it's one of those titles that we see Madden always do really well. FIFA obviously does extremely well worldwide. When we look at baseball, it hasn't really had that giant of an audience. It's pretty much us. The Caribbean area plays baseball. South Korea plays baseball. Japan. It's not necessarily a worldwide sport as much as something like soccer or football is. So there's still room to be growing on an international stage. When we look nationally, though, baseball is always up in the top five for sports, and it hinders a bit between third and fourth, it feels like. This, in general, is not going to be the move to put MLB on a huge sports radar, but it is a giant move to unify the consoles and potentially make a stronger esports scene than some of the other esports scenes we've seen out there that have run off multiple games. I mean, you see a lot of growth in the NBA 2K League, FIFA League, or MLS with FIFA, mainly because they're choosing one title, and the title they're choosing is multi-platform. So I think this is a really, really strong long-term move, or maybe, I don't know, it depends what you determine as long-term, but even short-term in the five-year range, I think this is going to be a really good move if they want to see any success in that esports league.
But it's going to be run by a bunch of boomers that currently run Major League Baseball, so it'll be interesting to see how that comes to fruition. But I know I'd be excited for it as a baseball fan myself.
Oh, yeah, with this coming to a console or even PC, I would most likely pick this up as well. Brooklyn Nets owner Joe Tsai invests $10 million into G2 Esports, which is now eyeing growth in China. That's one of the main reasons he chose to invest in that particular esports organization. The deal is rumored to have moved G2's evaluation up to $100 million as well, John. So we're seeing esports teams overall on the large landscape internationally continue to grow their valuation. G2 Esports, with its current expansions, especially through its League of Legends success this past year on a world stage, with them making it to the finals, it's just continuing to grow and continuing to grow. And it was over there. It got a lot of showtime in China, obviously playing against a Chinese team in the finals. G2 sees China as another big market for esports, as everyone does, and they're making significant moves to move into that, and then locking down a huge person here in Joe Tsai with that $10 million value or investment into the company, mainly because based on those Chinese moves, is a big, big move for G2. So continuing to grow globally, but Joe Tsai in general sees their expansion, and the fact that they're looking at Asia, that's what everyone wants. Everyone sees how big the Chinese market is, even if they add limitations to video games. Joe Tsai wants to invest into an organization like G2 looking to make those moves.
Yeah, and China's really where we're going to see the big esport boom happen. It's obviously the country with the largest amount of people population-wise, but it's again, aside from their restrictions on video games, it's also one of the biggest and fastest-growing countries in terms of esports as well. You know, we're seeing other organizations, even South Korean organizations, open up training centers in China. We're seeing now Western teams move into China as well, maybe just for a team, maybe for a training center, maybe for some kind of esport experience or way to build their brand in a growing Chinese market. I mean, when you take a look at the world economy, also China is maybe one of the more stable regions in the world right now, just because they, the market there is just booming because, they have a bunch of manufacturing that goes on over there. It's there's a ton of stuff going on. So it's a really a good move for G2 moving into China with this $10 million investment. It's going to go a long, long way to help improve G2. Not saying they need improvement, but everyone can improve a little bit.
Yes, they can. And Caffeine is going to make an improvement of their own. They have made a deal with Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster. He is signing a deal with Caffeine to begin a 16-episode series where he'll be gaming with other celebrities. In addition to this, Caffeine has also approached a few other athletes about deals, one of those being Kyle Kuzma. When I look at this deal in general, John, I don't see Caffeine as a computer still or a competitor. I see them as a low-end tier competitor. I feel like it's Twitch, then YouTube, and then somewhere in here is like Mixer Caffeine area, with Mixer even a little bit higher than Caffeine. When I look at this deal, though, you look at Twitch, you look at YouTube, even Facebook Gaming, Mixer, they're all going for streamers. They're all signing these big-name streamers that pull in millions of viewers or hundreds of thousands of viewers. Caffeine, I think, realizes that they cannot compare in that area, or that they could pay out streamers, but it's really not having a great impact just yet. This is them saying, we already have all these athletes out there that have tons of followers, tons of viewers on whatever content they do. Let's take a different route. Let's let Facebook and Microsoft and Amazon and all of them just fight over these big name streamers, because there's only a select few out there. I mean, there's maybe like 30 or 40 in that range that everyone's looking at. But athletes, there's tons of athletes out there. So as much as I don't think Caffeine is going to be the giant competitor that they want to be, I think this is a really good new innovative move. Tackle the athletes that already have the following, the athletes that it seems like no one else is really going after for the most part. Why not hop on that train now, try to sign some of them and bring in that athlete following and almost become not necessarily the sports-based gaming platform, but to at least lock down some of the sport personalities before some of these other platforms start to do the same thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting seeing how all these different platforms are coming up with unique ways to kind of stand out from one another. A 16-episode series, I can't really think of any big name that does kind of like a TV series, if you will, online, like, where it's a scripted show, or maybe it's like a show that's, a day in the life of kind of thing with the production and everything. I know you do have like those streams that are highly produced, or people will, play a recorded produced video on their Twitch stream or on their Mixer stream or something like that. But from what this sounds like, it sounds like it's going to have more in common with a TV series than it will anything we've really seen on a streaming platform. So it's unique seeing Caffeine go this route and also teaming up, like you said, Joey, with pro players. One player I follow, Trey Turner, shortstop for the world champion Washington Nationals, throw that in there. He streams on Caffeine also. He has a very sizable social media following. When he tweets out that he's playing Fortnite, he still only pulls in maybe 30, 40, 50, 60 people. Very rarely does he ever break the 100 viewer mark. And I think that just has to do with the fact that it's on Caffeine. I feel like if he was streaming on a different platform, he'd probably get more people. So it's interesting to see, and I do agree with you, Joe. I do think that if Caffeine goes in this direction of signing star athletes or just athletes that people are familiar with to bring them into Caffeine, I think that would be a nice untapped market, like you said, to really accelerate Caffeine's exposure to the rest of the streaming and gaming world.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing to think about as well, like, now that they're going after athletes, I think also the music realm is another good idea. I mean, there are so many big artists out there that are potentially gamers as well. I think that could be the next entertainment genre we really see tackled, that or, like, actors and actresses. So a lot of different areas to explore. I like the fact that caffeine is not just buying in as the fifth streaming platform and going for the same exact people that everyone else is. I think it's nice that they're taking a unique approach to this, and hopefully this will continue to open up the whole lens as well. Twitch is making moves, though. They have partnered up with a few others. They have signed on Lyric, who announced his partnership with Twitch to continue on, as well as Tim the Tapman and Dr. Lupo. So three big signings there. Not the biggest on the platform. I think the biggest on Twitch's platform still is Tfue. He has not signed with anyone, to my knowledge, so he's still open for an offer. And then Pokimani, I think, is the highest female streamer as far as consistency with numbers over there. So three other streamers signing on, though. Definitely successful streamers. Lyric does a great job. Tim the Tapman and Dr. Lupo as well, very, very popular. Dr. Lupo also known for his charitable work. I think he raised, it was close to $1 million, I think, this year for St. Jude. So, and he's upping that to like 2-point-something million next year or somewhere. Correct my numbers if I'm wrong. But either way, he raises a lot of money for charity. Great stuff going on in his stream. I think Twitch is making good moves. They're jumping into people that are already on the platform, that people that already have a great following, people that they want to stay, that they're going to pay a pretty penny for it, but they're probably not going to break the bank for someone like a Ninja or a Shroud like Mixer did previously. So we'll see where this all goes. I have a feeling this is just the beginning. I think there's quite a few more out there. I'd say about 20 or so more get signed.
I think what's interesting here is Tim the Tapman is a good friend of Ninja, and I believe they're represented by the same agency that assisted with Ninja signing to Mixer. So it was kind of curious, especially prior to this, Tim the Tapman was hanging out with Ninja quite a bit over at Ninja's crib. And, you know, it was interesting because, you know, a lot of people saw it was like, hey, look, is Tim going to jump ship also? Is he going to follow, you know, Ninja over to Mixer? And a lot of people thought he was. Then this report came out saying that he signed with Twitch for the ongoing future, which I think is good for Twitch. Joey, I think you hit the nail on the head. He's not one of the like main top dogs, but he does have a very sizable audience. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes forward for him. But I am a little shocked that his friendship with Ninja and the fact I believe they do share that same agency did not play into him possibly moving over to Mixer.
No, I think it was a good move overall if I'm the agency. Mm-hmm. Why not have one of the top streamers on both platforms? Why not continue to build those connections on both sides? I mean, if anyone benefited, the streamers definitely benefited, but I have a feeling the agency being able to maintain those connections with both networks is a huge, huge plus for them as well. Scuf Gaming, John, not a streamer, but a great product. Scuf Gaming, we know them for having deals with leagues like the NBA 2K League. A lot of people use them in other sports leagues as well as many other leagues like Call of Duty. Scuf Gaming is that amazing controller company. They've partnered up with Corsair. They are now part of the Corsair family. I believe Corsair bought them out completely. So Corsair being great in peripherals for computers, especially also known for the PC fans, for those of you who built custom PCs out there. They're continuing to expand their peripheral lineup, and this is an interesting move from them, not only sticking with the keyboard and mouse peripherals, but taking a dive into console gaming as well, picking up possibly the number one console controller maker, I would say, out there.
Yeah, I think it's great. Great third-party controller maker for a lot of console gaming. I'm going to be interested to see what Corsair does to kind of tweak this and make it a little bit better. I do know one of the biggest concerns a lot of gamers had when it came to Scuf Gaming, and I know it's something Scuf has addressed over the past several years, is a lot of people would complain that, you know, their controllers would break a little bit easier than like the, you know, manufacturer of Xbox controllers or PlayStation controllers. So that's something I'm going to be interested to see what Corsair does to address. Corsair, like you said, Joey, known for making great peripherals and making parts for the PCs. If you custom build your own PC, they're known for quality. So it'll be nice to see them take what is already great in Scuf Gaming and kind of put their tweak on it to make it even better. Scuf Gaming also helping develop controllers to help combat some of the injuries gamers can get while using controllers, you know, finger cramps, carpal tunnel, all that other fun stuff that gamers hate. They've redesigned some controllers to help assist that going forward for gamers. That's something really cool too, and I'm really excited to see what Corsair can do with that in the long term with this purchase.
I'm just saying, y'all are raging way too much if you're breaking controllers, whether it be scuff, whether it be a basic controller. I mean, I can't even tell you guys the number of hours that I put into Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare without breaking a controller. Like, what is going on over here, people?
Joey, you are not going to sit here and tell me you have never yeeted a controller across the room.
No, I've never thrown a controller. The only thing that I've really broken, in a sense, on a controller is the fact that I've worn the analog sticks out too much. Like, the resistance on them is too low after a while.
No,
I mean, we're talking lots of time.
I have done my fair share of throwing controllers. I have no problem admitting that. Yeeting my controllers across the room, generally into something soft like a pillow, or my bed, or a chair, or something that I know is not going to break it. I don't think I've ever outright broken a controller from raging. I've broken a controller because I wanted to see how much force it would take for it to break. But that controller was already dead. I think it was like a PlayStation 2 wired controller, and I just was like, I don't want that anymore. Who uses wired controllers anymore? So, yeah, no, pretty cool. And I don't really slam my mouse or anything because, fun fact, gaming mice are a lot more expensive than an Xbox controller. Yeah.
That's not exactly true.
The one
the
I
controllers
have
go for like $60 nowadays, and the elite stuff goes to like $120.
Well, I'm not talking about your elite stuff. You know, the people that want like the 18 triggers on the back of your Xbox controller.
Man, how much did your mouse cost?
I'd rather not talk about
that. Oh my gosh. Okay, well, mine's in the same price range. Let it be. Overwatch League, they've announced a partnership as well. This one's with TeamSpeak. It kind of caught me off guard a little bit. TeamSpeak will be their official voice supplier for the next 3 years. I'm kind of stunned by this. I feel like I haven't heard anything about TeamSpeak in, it almost feels like a decade, to be completely honest. But now they're the official partner of the Overwatch League. I'm kind of surprised we didn't see them go with something like a Discord here. Then again, Discord might not have wanted to spend the funding on locking down that partnership either.
Things I don't like about TeamSpeak. You have to pay for your own server. I mean, again, I haven't used it since like Cataclysm and Wrath of the Lich King days of World of Warcraft. But it was one of those things, like, when you were in a guild, you were expected to pay money towards the guild also, especially if you're using TeamSpeak or Ventrilo. I don't know. Hopefully they change their tactics. I mean, Discord's really kind of opened the doors up for the way players communicate in games now. And I think it's interesting that Overwatch League is having a voice supplier when there's in-game communication already. So I think that's going to be interesting going forward.
I mean, this could be one of those things for teams outside of actual stage matches as well. Like for setting up organized scrims or practices, something like that, this could be their official supplier for that. I think the bigger question mark to me is the fact that I didn't even know TeamSpeak still existed, to be completely honest.
There's that too.
Another thing that really caught me by surprise this year, John, is PUBG Mobile. So Tencent has announced a new 5-part original web series for the India-based PUBG market. On top of this, it's going to feature 5 stories for those PUBG mobile players based out of the India market. This is their giant market as far as mobile gaming goes. Also big in South Korea and China, but India has really topped them over. Fun fact, PUBG Mobile has surpassed 600 million downloads so far this year. And the revenue is close to surpassing $1 billion. PUBG, that game that we thought died because of bugs. Yeah, its mobile version, 600 million downloads, $1 billion that it's made. In comparison, John, between PC and console together, it's only sold 60 million units. So we're talking a lot more selling on mobile as far as revenue made, as far as units downloaded. The mobile version of PUBG is straight up killing it, especially in India, China, and South Korea.
Well, they're probably not having those same bugs we hear in North America had in PUBG that had a lot of people writing them off early from the get-go when it took them like 5 years, it feels like, to fix any of their freaking bugs. You know what? Good for PUBG. I'm happy for them. You know, go for it. Expand your market in India. Expand your market anywhere else that people actually play this game still. One of my friends that played PUBG has recently admitted to me that about 2 months ago, he just stopped playing PUBG because he was just tired of it and all the errors and all the other crap that still goes on in that game to this day. So there you go. More people who lasted this long in PUBG quitting still. Look at that. Weird.
Well, the key is the fact that it's still growing. It's growing a lot faster than the quitters out there. And I think one of the things to keep in mind is the developer is different. Bluehole and PUBG Corp developed the PC console version. The mobile version, I believe, is fully developed by Tencent. So we're looking at that Chinese giant over there that seems to just dominate the mobile gaming market in Tencent. They're the ones developing this. It feels much cleaner than the console version. I don't even know when I played it, 7-8 months ago, maybe even longer. But it feels much cleaner. You don't feel the glitches. The mobile controls are very fluid. I'm not playing it still today just because it's time consuming. But the quality of the game seems much, much higher to me than the PC console version.
Yes, and shout out to chat here in Twitch real quick. The PC version costs money. The mobile version is free.
Right, and notice that the mobile version still has a ton more revenue.
Yeah.
Because microtransactions are a thing, people.
You can always justify another $5, but you can't justify a $60 down purchase on a game from the get-go if it's getting horrible reviews.
Right, and see, this is what bothers me with other... I'm not going to get into this rant right now, but this is why I wish Overwatch 2 was a free-to-play game. I wish they would put it out there free, allow people to buy in, and then maybe you keep your loot box mechanic, maybe you don't, but I feel like there's something special about launching free games nowadays. You get a ton more downloads. Yeah, some people are going to complain about your microtransactions, but when it comes down to it, I think you still are going to make money in most cases. If you put out a solid game, you're going to make more money in stuff like microtransactions than you will in a flat price.
Yeah,
so we'll see what happens.
Just ask my League of Legends account.
Yeah, I mean, just make it cosmetic. I don't want to have to pay for actual things that like a gun in a game. I shouldn't have to pay for a gun in Call of Duty. I should unlock all that free. But if I want a certain skin, then I'm okay maybe shelling out some cash here and there.
No pay to win.
Exactly. One thing that you will have to pay to win some skins in if you want them is Overwatch's Winter Wonderland event. It is back, John. There's some cool skins out there, and you can earn those rewards through January 2nd. One of the big things about this event that I always have issues with is the fact that I feel like you have to amass a certain amount of gold in your pile to really get every skin just because of the RNG elements of the loot box. With that being said, those skins that you do roll, there are some very cool ones out there this year.
Yeah, it is. And I'm really excited also for May's snowball fight back again with that awesome voice line where she giggles and she says, "I put a rock in this one." So really, it's totally May. It's great. This is probably one of the events I absolutely love every year when it comes around is the Winter Wonderland. A lot of really cool skins. The Mercy skin, look, although it's a complete recolor of her basic skin, it still looks amazing. I believe Doomfist has a really awesome skin this year as well. It's either Doomfist or Sigma. One of the two. I'm blanking on it. But they are one of those.
Sigma, I think.
Sigma.
Does.
Yeah, Sigma has a really, really cool skin as well. It's great. I love this event. It is probably my favorite seasonal event Overwatch does.
And there's a lot of other seasonal events, just a couple few others to hit on, I guess. Apex Legends has Hollow Day Bash. Their event is live as well. I believe it ends in January. And then Fortnite did something a little differently here. They went with a Star Wars themed event with the new Star Wars movie coming out this week, actually. I believe it's Thursday. This past weekend, they launched an event that had an exclusive movie trailer shown in game, a custom game scene with a Millennium Falcon flying around in the sky, a live interview with director J.J. Abrams, playable lightsabers, and more. I think there's what is that thing called? Your parachute thing? They had like a TIE fighter parachute they gave away. Don't you laugh at me like that.
I will.
Anyway, really cool stuff. And we always get holiday events. I think holiday events are very fun. It's a good way to introduce new skins, new maps, new game types. Gears of War 5 is doing one too called Gearsmas. Clash of Clans and Clash Royale do Clashmas. I mean, it feels like almost every major live service game, in a sense, drops a lot of these type of events. I do like the fact that Fortnite goes with a different approach here. I'll come back to you. Wait a minute. Hand down, class. Questions at the end. With Star Wars coming out this week, though, I do like the fact that Fortnite is capitalizing on this. We saw them do it with Marvel and the Avengers, now doing it again with Star Wars here. Really great content. And the fact that they're able to do this all in-game, I think, just really brings a special aspect to the way they release new content with cinematics in-game, whether it be scenes being played out, movie trailers, or interviews. It's just, I don't like Fortnite that much in and of myself, but I can't deny Epic has been very creative with these special events. Okay, sir. You can be called on.
Question, Mr. King of the Courtside. with all the studios Microsoft has acquired, with all the brains and knowledge they have acquired and paid a pretty penny for, Gearsmas is the best title they could have come up with?
Oh, Gearsmith is huge. This has been happening for
But that name is years. So blah.
Oh, I love it. What else would you call it?
Not Gearsmith.
Oh, I think it's fine. What's wrong with Gearsmith?
How about ho ho ho, I chainsaw you in half? Like, that sounds better.
That is one heck of a long hashtag.
Or or how about this? How about you have, you know, Santa's on, you know, everyone gets a Santa cosmetic on one team and everyone else has like the striking elves on the other team, and the elves have to go and saw Santa in half. How about that?
I mean, that could still be a game type, but you have to come up with a name for the overall event.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna steal what Squirtle said. Cogmas.
Okay, Cogmas is good, but that's very similar to Gearsmith.
But Gearsmith, I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling it.
Well, rev your chainsaw in and prove it to me in game, because we are moving on to our next topic. Konami's eFootball PES competition. We talked about this one last week. We kind of slammed Bayern a bit for this move, actually. Bayern Munich is not the only team buying into this league, though. A few other well-known teams, Barcelona, Manchester United, again, Bayern Munich, Juventus, we already knew about that one, Arsenal being another one. It's going to be 10 organizations in total buying into the Pro Evolution Soccer League. I believe it's going to be officially called eFootball Pro Evolution Soccer League. Each club is going to put forth three players, so it's going to be a 3v3 competition in a season-long format versus these particular 10 clubs. So this league is bigger than we originally thought. At the same point, even with these being big-name clubs, I don't see this being the move that's really going to put PES back on a big radar.
I don't either, but look at some of these names that have committed to this league. I mean, it was big when Fnatic signed with AS Roma and they launched, you know, an eFIFA team or whatever we're going to call it. But AS Roma is not Barcelona, Manchester United, Juventus, Arsenal, you know, or Bayern Munich. So, you know, these are some heavy hitters. And I feel like Konami is really actually putting all their bread into this basket of trying to become relevant again with these big names. Now, I don't think it's going to work either, Joey, but this has to make FIFA and EA Sports a little uneasy with all these big name teams now committing to essentially the unsanctioned soccer game of the world. You know, when EA Sports has like the rights to the Champions League, and I believe even the World Cup, you know, they have rights to the World Cup. You know, they don't put out a World Cup game anymore, but now it's an added feature every 4 years in FIFA. So this definitely puts FIFA on notice. But I agree with you, Joey. I don't think it's enough to really dethrone them or really kind of make a dent yet.
I mean, the biggest issue for me, and I don't know any of the numbers or logistics on this, but I feel like Konami is paying for these rights. With EA Sports, FIFA automatically puts people in as the guarantee for the FIFA game itself. With Konami's version, people have to be paid for this. I'm assuming they're shelling out cash to Bayern Munich and Barcelona and Manchester United. They're just not going to switch just to switch, at least in my humble opinion. So when I look at that perspective, I feel like this is going to be a net loss for Konami overall. Like, are all Man U fans going to buy in just to play Man U in this game? I mean, they're still available in FIFA. It's only who? Juventus that's officially changed over? And then the arena for Barcelona?
No, the arena for Bayern.
All right, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, and no, you're absolutely right. Konami's paying money, 100%. You look on Bayern Munich's website, Konami is a tier two investor or sponsor, I should say, for Bayern Munich. You know, I believe they are considered like platinum level. They do theirs by League of Legends rankings also. I believe FIFA and EA Sports was like a gold tier. Like, they weren't paying as much money, but, you know, they were paying for that right to have essentially that full Bayern experience in game. And now, you know, Juventus completely out of the game. Bayern, that iconic stadium in Germany, out of the game. Barcelona, now Man U, Arsenal. I mean, I want to see the other teams as well, just to kind of get a gauge on who they're really talking to. But no, you're 100% correct. Konami's paying out money fist over hand constantly for these deals in hopes that supporters of these clubs are going to come buy their product. And like I said, you know, we touched on it last week, like you said, Joey, I'm not buying this. I'm not buying PES. I'm not. I'm sorry. you know, yeah, it sucks playing Bayern now when you don't play in the Allianz Arena, but it's not enough for me to drop another $60 on a game that I've never had a good experience with, that feels too arcadey to me, and doesn't really have a lot of those really neat features that's featured in FIFA. So it's going to take more than this to really win people over.
It's terrible, in my humble opinion. I mean, they're making good moves in a sense that it might jump the needle a little bit. But I think when we looked at numbers last week, PES only owned like 5% of that soccer-playing video game audience. I mean, when FIFA has that giant of a portion, these little deals are going to move a few players here and there. But are really that many other people going to buy into this? If you're a Bayern Munich fan and you have friends all over the world playing FIFA, and you want to play with them, do I buy the game to get my arena, or do I buy the game to play with my friends? I mean, I just don't see this unless you get giant groups of people flocking over. I feel like Konami is just losing tons and tons of money. And this, honestly, again, I don't know what their funding looks like, but this could be the final nail in the coffin. If all of these deals don't work, if this league does not take off viewership-wise, this could be the end where they say, hey, we're closing shop. FIFA has dominated this competition for years. We're continuing to lose money on a net basis. Now might be the time to close it in. I think that's honestly what this is going to lead to, but I hope for their sake they prove me wrong. Dun, 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 dun. Sony has brought on Greg Rice as the new global head of indie accounts. He's formerly the VP of business with Double Fine, and Double Fine is that most recently acquired studio by Microsoft. So he was most likely one of the ones to have brokered that deal for Double Fine to move under Microsoft. Now he is moving over to Sony as the head of indie accounts, a big, big move over there.
Yeah, he brokered the deal, then realized how terrible of a decision it was and came over to the good side. So good for him coming over to Sony.
I think it was probably more of a giant pay raise to do so, but we can go that route if you want.
Hey, make me feel better about Sony completely being dominated so far in this next generation.
No, I mean, I think it's a good move. Double Fine is one of those studios that people have really highly acclaimed. I think it's been around for like 20, 25 years. Correct me if I'm wrong on that chat, but it's been around for quite a while. Bringing someone like Greg over, he's going to come with a lot of experience working as a third-party studio, building connections all over the place, working with Microsoft. Microsoft is very indie-heavy, as is Nintendo, so the fact that he's going to bring over that experience, even from the little bit of time he spent with Microsoft, should be a buffer and a bonus as well. On Microsoft's side, they have made a move on the opposing side. Their initiative studio continues to add more talent. They're adding another big name in Tyler Thornock, who will be a principal technical animator. I think that's the proper name, right? Yeah, principal technical animator. He was previously with Naughty Dog and BioWare. So Sony takes a Microsoft guy, Microsoft takes a Sony guy. Two big moves overall, one moving in the indie title direction, the other continuing in the direction he was originally brought on with. Very notable stuff over at Naughty Dog and BioWare, now making that shift over to Microsoft in the initiative. Again, we still have no idea what the initiative is building. A lot of people are rumoring it to be an RPG, but the talented names they have, John, if they don't deliver something north of a AAA game, it's going to be a huge flop.
Yeah, and I believe with these swaps, the Sony from stealing from Microsoft and Microsoft stealing from Sony and everybody else count is up to 376-4 in favor of Xbox. It's ridiculous how much they're acquiring. You know what? A AAA title, Joey, is still too low. I need a quad. I need
that's what I mean. It's
got
to be north of that. It's got to be a quadruple A.
I need an octuplet A, if you will. I need eight A's with all the people they're pulling in. Eight.
Yeah, I mean, whenever the game launches, I feel like it has to be game of the year. It has to be a hit right at the start. The award has got to be done. It's got to be over. Jeff Keighley can come out and say, game of the year goes to the initiative's new title. Da-da-da. I mean, with this much talent over there from Crystal Dynamics, from Naughty Dog, from all of these huge interactive studios from Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft, third-party studios galore as well, they brought in so much talent that needs to be tapped into a great title for this to really be a huge success. The studio in Santa Monica is doing so great, supposedly, based on their talent scouting, based on what they've built so far. Everyone seems super excited about it. But us as fans, we have no idea what they're building yet. We're just really, really hoping it delivers to what they're hyping it up to be. Sticking with Microsoft, another one of their studios here, Playground Games and Forza Horizon with Turn 10 and Playground. Forza Horizon 4 has added a Battle Royale mode, John. The Battle Royale mode that no one saw coming. The Eliminator. It's going to be a 72-player Battle Royale mode. Only one car will win. It's going to be a free update as well. I've only seen a couple things about it. It's pretty much everyone is racing toward a central point. There is a circle, like Fortnite and The Storm and every other Battle Royale title in the world. It's pretty much just going to continue to suck in as these cars race to some kind of finish line. I've not played it myself. People are super hyped about it from the sound of things. It feels kind of awkward, but it is a nice fresh take on the Battle Royale genre.
No, it's not. It's the same thing repackaged as something different. I'm tired of the Battle Royale scene. It is so boring. It is so stale. It is so unoriginal now. Stop with the Battle Royale. Are you trying to crash cars now to give cars a certain amount of damage to kill them and leave them in the storm that's closing in? Or are we talking about the fastest car wins? And in that case, it's pay to win because you buy parts or you buy cars or whatever. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I can't even find all the information. Yeah. I haven't seen... There's got to be live streams, but I'm not going to watch one right now. So we'll follow up on that. I don't have Forza Horizon. If it's available on PC, we could probably download it for free and check it out. But for now, it's a different Battle Royale. Again, like John said, the genre in and of itself is pretty similar. I do like the fact that this brings something different to the genre. It's not just pick up weapons, shoot another guy, move toward mid. It's something different. It's racing-based. It's car-based. You can show off your custom cars, just like skins in Fortnite, in a sense. But on top of that, are we racing to a finish? Are we trying to blow up cars on the way? How is the competitor really finalized outside of the storm sucking people in? So a lot of different things to keep in mind there, but a cool, different, unique take, in my opinion, even though John's not the biggest fan. Okay, John, the Game Awards. The Game Awards happened on Thursday. We did a little watch party here. It was kind of fun on the OTN Discord. That's discord.me/OTN for listeners out there who are not on here yet. Just to break through some of the stuff, I'm curious to go through some of the announcements with you. We'll kick things off with Microsoft's biggest announcement. They unveiled the name of their new Xbox, the next-gen Xbox. It is Xbox Series X. So the name itself is Xbox, and then Series X is the way that they're displaying the line. A lot of people came out and said they hated this name at the beginning, I being one of those. Since then, a lot of people have changed their mind. I'm still kind of iffy on the name myself, but I like the fact they are going with Xbox as the name and the Series just as the identifier of the different SKU number. Overall, the design itself, we've seen refrigerator memes. We've seen computer tower memes. We've seen all different crazy things. We've also seen some amazing custom designs done with the new look. Overall, I did not like it at first. The design has grown on me a lot. I think I like the design a lot. I don't know if I'm sold on the name just yet. What are your thoughts overall on the Xbox Series X that stunned and surprised the world?
Let's start out with the obvious here. Okay, look, I'm not going to hit on the obvious, the fact that look, it does look like a refrigerator. It does look like Xbox and Microsoft have given up on the whole console idea and gone straight PC. I'm not going to touch on any of that because I feel like that's beating a dead horse. What I want to touch on, Joey, is there's still a physical CD-ROM drive built into this next generation of console. And if PlayStation comes out with this also, I'm going to give them just as much crap for the PlayStation 5. Why in the digital world do we still have a CD-ROM drive here? I do not have a CD-ROM in any of the custom computers I have built. Every person I have talked to in regards to building a custom PC does not have an optical drive in it. They are completely pointless. Literally, you can get a high-speed Blu-ray CD-ROM drive for a computer for $20, brand new, out of the box, right then there, $20. That goes to tell you how little of a demand there really is for an optical drive. Now, yes, I get it. Maybe you don't have high-speed internet. Maybe you don't want to wait 3 days to download the next version of Madden that hasn't changed in 15 years. I get it. I understand your concern. I am sorry. It makes no sense to waste space with an optical drive and the next generation of consoles coming out in 2020. To me, that is absurd. Now, I know they are playing to that small population. I get it. But it is still just, to me, it's a waste.
So there's one other major factor you're missing out on here. And that is the fact that the Xbox Series X is going to be backwards compatible all the way to original Xbox titles. Not all of those are available digitally at this point. So this Blu-ray drive is going to give access to some of those 360 games as well as original Xbox games that do not have backwards compatibility in the digital format just yet. That's the main reason I think you're getting this. That and the fact that people complained last generation that there was not a disc drive in the original plans, and then they had to have it back because Xbox wanted to go all digital last gen at the beginning, and people were pissed. With that being said, I believe Sony is going to have a disc drive as well. Now, on their side, I think the argument is a little harder to have because they're only doing backwards compatibility up to PlayStation 4 from the sound of things. And if that is the case, I believe all of those titles are available digitally at this point. So again, it would just be catering to that smaller population that still wants the disc to be put in the drive.
Yeah, and that makes sense for the backwards compatibility side of it. And I think, you know, that's where Xbox definitely wins if Sony does limit the backwards compatibility to PlayStation 4 games. You hit the nail on the head, Joey. They're all, I would argue, 99% available digitally. If Xbox is going to let you go all the way back to 360 and even the original Xbox, guess what? If you're an NCAA football fan or an NCAA basketball fan that haven't been able to play those games since 2013 when the NCAA didn't allow EA Sports to make those titles or anyone to make those titles ever again, guess what? You can now actually play that again on the new Xbox Series X. I think that is probably one of the bigger upsides here. You know, as someone who I can't tell you the last time I bought a physical disc for a video game. You know, I have a PS4. Can't tell you the last time I bought a PS4 game. I have a PC. Can't tell you the last time I bought a physical PC game. It's all been digital downloads. I feel like that's the way the world is trending. You know, we're seeing companies take these crazy risks and having them pay off. Let's talk about Apple and the headphone jack for a moment. That's really paid off. A lot of people made fun of them. Samsung got rid of the headphone jack. So I feel like that's going to be the next step. I do feel like maybe this generation might be the last generation to have that physical drive. After this next generation, I think it's gone.
I just don't see that many more generations of consoles in general. That I think too. If anything, we're going to see a new and improved, like, Steam. What is that thing called? The Steam Box? The, you know what I'm talking about? The thing that linked with Steam?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know.
I feel like
about.
That's almost like the next thing, but like a wireless version of that. Something that doesn't have to be wired to the PC, but it's either cloud-based or runs off of a PC. I don't know if I see consoles lasting that long, unless it's just a full-out digital box, which I think Xbox is going to release a digital-only version as well, probably with less hardware specs as well, though. So I'm curious to see where this all goes. I think now we're getting to the point where Xbox and PlayStation are going to rival some low-end to mid-end PC graphics, in a sense. We're seeing them move up in frames per second. We're seeing them move up in teraflops. I don't exactly know how that breaks down, but I'm sure someone can break that down out there. Overall, the specs in general are improving, and they're improving at a rapid rate. I mean, the Xbox One X is years above the Xbox One, it feels like, and now this is double to four times the power of the Xbox One X in the Xbox Series X. Naming over at Microsoft, they're not quite there yet. Step at a time, boys. Step at a time. But John, on top of all this, we got some great awards. We saw a lot of great games be announced. What games in particular stood out to you that we saw trailers of or announcements of at the Game Awards?
Hellblade looked really cool. That's one that really caught my attention from the get-go. I believe that was when we kind of giggled about a little bit in that OTN watch party. Two League of Legends titles being announced. Rune King. Let's see. It was Rune King, and what am I blanking on the other one? Was there a title for the other one?
Yeah, Echo. Oh. It was the Echo one.
Echo's thing. I'm going to quickly scroll through the article and see if I can find it.
Come on, chat. Where you at?
I'm blanking on this.
It was Zahn. He's from Zahn. Was it something Zahn?
Come on,
I got
Riot.
You. Echo Riot-o, game. Riot-o, game
I'm
going to
blame
awards.
This on Riot as normal.
John, that is Convergence.
Convergence. Thank you. Convergence and Rune King, both Riot or League of Legends based games in their new third party accessibility for other developers to kind of help create and expand the lore and gaming of the League of Legends universe. That's something as a League of Legends player who's been playing since beta, I'm really excited for. There's background stories I'm dying to know. So I'm really super excited for those two announcements as well. Joey, I won't steal all the thunder because I know you absolutely love the final announcements for Fast and Furious Crossroads when Vin Diesel came out on stage. When everyone went, hooray, another Fast and Furious video game that I'm so not going to buy.
I mean, Vin Diesel's a great guest, but it felt like a blunder, really, to end the show on that. Like, having him come out is great, but then he makes these awkward jokes about, well, did you see the trailer yet? So we're like, oh, are we going to get a trailer reveal? Nope. So half the stuff they talked about was not even related to the game. It was kind of underwhelming. Honestly, something like the Xbox Project X announcement at the end of that could have been really cool. Or maybe you hold Senua's Sacrifice Hellblade. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of different announcements that could have taken that spot and could have been a little bit better. But then again, did they announce the Game of the Year award winner? Was that Vin Diesel that made that announcement?
I believe it was.
So that's probably part of the deal as well. Yeah. Have some big name out there for that. But I mean, someone else could have come out. Ninja could have come out. I mean, there's different moves that could have been made. As far as best looking game, I think Senua has to win that hands down. That's going to be an Xbox and PC exclusive, at least to our knowledge, moving into 2020. That'll probably come out, I don't know, what do you think, 2021? 2021,
yeah,
2022?
Probably 2021. Probably late 2021.
Yeah, so that'll be a little bit down the road. What we saw was an in-game engine. I don't know what you call that. A video made from an in-game engine. It was not in-game play. It was not a cinematic trailer. It was purely made in the in-game engine for that particular thing. Godfall was another big one that came out. That was PlayStation 5. That was a PlayStation 5 only reveal, I believe. And they also revealed another one with Ghost of Tsushima. One of the other big announcements of the night was PlayerUnknown. PUBG, the one we just talked about. Brendan PlayerUnknown is coming out with a new game called Prologue. So that's another one that quite a few people are hyped about. I think my issue with this is it going to be as glitchy as PUBG, or are we looking at something completely different? So I still have question marks on that one, but it does look cool overall. We got our first look at Gears Tactics. Gears Tactics is one of those new tactical type of style games. It's going to come out with kind of like that Wasteland feel to it. It's going to release on PC in April. Ori and the Will of the Wisp is up there for art direction for next year already. That one comes out in March. We have Control getting its first expansion. Final Fantasy VII Remake got shown. Humankind. So a lot of different announcements out there. You guys can check out the trailers as well. John, go ahead.
Humankind is the other one I was looking for.
Yeah, that's got a lot of positive and a lot of negative feedback.
So as someone who enjoys the whole Civilization-style games with those turn-based games, and just watching, like being able to kind of almost not recreate history, but kind of write your own history through these historical eras. Humankind, to me, like really intrigued me. I saw that and thought it was like, you know, to me, the graphics look great. You know, the gameplay is definitely a very like Civ styled game there. I feel like it may have a better art style because there's one thing Civ lacks in. It's kind of like how your country develops as a whole. It looks very spotty all over the place, even when you put your districts down. Humankind looks like it fills it out a little bit more. And the customization of your leader I thought was really cool. The other one that I saw in here was the trailer for Maneater, where you play a shark and you get to eat people. That one really intrigued me also. I thought that looks really, really cool. It looks a lot better than the original trailer that was released, and showed a lot more gameplay and customization options. So that's one I'm looking out for as well. I just wanted to throw those two in there, Joey.
Now, I mean, I hate to be this guy, but when I saw the Humankind trailer roll, I actually thought it was the next Civ 6 expansion.
I did too. I totally did also. I was like, oh, great, another expansion pack. I was like, oh, it's a different game.
Rip. So yeah, we'll see how that competes with Sid Meier's Civilization 6. Civ 6 just seems like it really has a foothold on that area. Age of Empires was up there for a little bit. There's a few others like Medieval Total War. But really, when it comes down to the straight-up city world building, it feels like Civ has a very firm grasp. But we'll see what Humankind ends up doing on that. Other than that, I mean, there were some other games, and you guys can check those out. I think the other biggest one to mention is The Wolf Among Us 2. That is a game by Telltale. Telltale being the studio that's very well-renowned for their storytelling that was being shut down earlier this year. Another studio acquired them, picked them up, or picked a lot of the developers up. Now we see them coming back into the fray with The Wolf Among Us 2. So really cool thing seeing Telltale still working out there as well. You got something?
Welcome back.
Hello. Okay, friends. I pretty much just mentioned The Wolf Among Us 2. I don't know what you caught. I could see John the whole time, so I don't know when I froze.
You froze right at the very beginning.
Oh, so good stuff. Wolf Among Us 2, Telltale lives on. It's going to tell more tales. Hey-o, moving on. Anything else that really stood out for you for the Game Awards other than the award winner, which we can mention here in a minute?
Magic Legends, I feel like, made a huge statement. Granted, there wasn't anything too groundbreaking, but just their presence. At almost every commercial break, there was a Magic Legends trailer out there. They were funny. They were engaging. I'm not a huge card-based player, gamer anymore. I played Magic back in the day with physical cards, but when it comes to, like, online card games, which I'd say it doesn't speak to me, but I do feel like they made a pretty good statement with Magic Legends with all their promotions out there. I feel like they were able to kind of reintroduce themselves, if you will, to the gaming community through that.
So a lot of different games out there won awards this particular night, this past Thursday, but one in particular that we have to touch on is Game of the Year. The nominees were Control by Remedy, Death Stranding by Kojima Productions, Sekiro Shadows Die Twice from Software, Resident Evil, Capcom, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, Nintendo and Bandai Namco, and The Outer Worlds with Obsidian and Private Division being the one putting that out. Really great games in that in general. John, I believe you predicted Death Stranding would win this. I ended up predicting Sekiro and voting for Sekiro. Sekiro did win in the end. I think it was a very tight contest between those two, as well as Control. One of the things to look at in this year in particular, though, John, when we look at a lot of these game award shows, like God of War, the year they won, it felt like everyone picked God of War. The year that Legend of Zelda won, it was like everyone picked Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. This year, we've seen Control win a Game of the Year award. We've seen Death Stranding. We've seen Sekiro. We've seen Resident Evil. It feels like everyone is picking a different game in this category. The Outer Worlds, I think, won one as well. And then someone, I don't remember who it was, so correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was like GameSpot or Gamescom or something, ended up doing another award based on currently going on games since it's so live service heavy nowadays. They did Sea of Thieves as their Game of the Year. So overall, if you look at all of these different Game of the Years, we've had like 7 or 8 so far, but at the Game Awards, it was Sekiro Shadows Die Twice that brings it home.
Yeah, and I think that's really good because it goes to speak about the quality of games that are coming out. Where before, it's like, there's that one like winner where everyone's like, yeah, there's no question about that. The fact that we have a debate, the fact that there is a question, the fact that there are multiple camps that are strongly for a certain game, just goes to speak about, the way these studios and developers are really taking time to put together a game people are going to enjoy, not just visually, but story-based wise, and just creating a new world for people to kind of escape their own world, their own reality for a little bit and kind of just get lost in a game. So I think it's a good thing. I do like the fact that there is a lot of debate around that. And I feel like debate's healthy, especially when it comes to Game of the Year. All the games nominated, definitely worthy of being nominated for sure. So it's not a knock to any of those games. But I just think that goes to speak on how far gaming and studios and developers have come in creating these masterpieces, these pieces of art that we call video games that we get to play and enjoy on a daily basis. So
100%. To run through a couple of these other ones, VRAR game went to Beat Saber, strategy game to Fire Emblem Three Heroes, sports racing game to Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled. Love that one right there. Score and music to Death Stranding, role-playing game Disco Elysium, performance was Mads Mikkelsen as Cliff in Death Stranding. Ongoing game, Fortnite Epic Games. Any surprise by that one, John?
No.
Narrative to Disco Elysium. Multiplayer game, Apex Legends. This one caught you and I by surprise by a bit. I think we both led toward Call of Duty or Borderlands 3 on this one. Apex does pick up the win, though. Mobile game to Call of Duty Mobile. No big surprise there. Independent game, Disco Elysium again. Games for Impact was Grease. Game Direction, Death Stranding. Fresh Indie Game, Disco Elysium. Fighting Game, Super Smash Bros. Family Game, Luigi's Mansion. Esports Team of the Year, I'm kind of stunned by this one. It was G2 Esports for League of Legends that won. They had a great run. They did well regionally. They did really well internationally. A lot of people picked Astralis in this category, though, as well. Esports Player went to Buga. We had Esports Host go to Shox from the League of Legends scene. Esports Game of the Year, League of Legends. Not a giant surprise there. Esports Event, the League of Legends Championship. Esports Coach went to Zonic of Astralis CSGO. Content Creator of the Year, Shroud. Community Spotlight was Destiny 2. This is a cool one to touch on. Destiny 2, John, have they pulled it back or what? This was a game that launched. Everyone was super hyped in the launch week. It did well for a while, and then just the content was not there in the end game. It fell off so hard. Since then, we've seen it release the expansion, I believe it was Trials of Osiris. Then it released another expansion, and here we are. And now it's out here winning community support a few years after launch.
It's absurd to think that Destiny 2, first off, Destiny in the series in general was never supposed to have a sequel, just a series of expansions, kind of like what World of Warcraft had. You had the base game, then you had expansion packs to kind of expand the lore and the play. They completely went against that. They launched Destiny 2. They didn't learn from their mistakes from Destiny 1 and flopped again in Destiny 2. And then somehow they managed to pull this one back. And I honestly can't tell you how. I really have no idea. Expansions have come out for it. Okay, great. That's awesome. You're paying for more content. Whatever. That's great. Good for you. The community, somehow they won the community back. I mean, that's something that PUBG hasn't been able to do. Apex is still kind of struggling to do it. I feel like Apex has a better chance at the moment, at least in the North American market. It's very interesting because normally, especially with Destiny, with how many people felt, alienated after the first Destiny, and then Destiny 2 comes back, and comes out, and a lot of people are like, hey, I'm going to give Destiny a shot, myself being one of them. And then Destiny 2 falling for the same mistakes that Destiny 1 did. It felt like, okay, look, now you've gotten over $120 out of me. I'm not happy with this product. It's completely unfinished. It's lacking content. It's lacking a lot of stuff. I don't want to play this anymore. So, like, for me, I haven't gone back to the game. They're going to have to do a lot more to win me back. But it's interesting to see how they've rebounded in their community for Destiny 2. It's actually quite impressive.
Another one that really surprised me was audio design went to Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Art direction was Control, not super surprised there. Action adventure game Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. And action game Devil May Cry 5. And those are all of your awards. Again, Game of the Year going to Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. So again, John, a lot of variety. Sekiro won a couple titles. Control won a couple. Disco Elysium won a couple. Death Stranding won a couple. But then you still have powerhouse titles like Super Smash out there winning titles. You have Gears of War was nominated for multiple categories. Resident Evil as a remake did really well as well. The Outer Worlds was highly praised. So there are so many games out there right now. Like chat saying, it's almost the golden age of gaming. And now we're heading into 2020. We're getting new consoles from Xbox and PlayStation. The Nintendo Switch will just continue moving on its own pace and doing Nintendo things. PC is getting upgraded graphics cards. It just feels like gaming in general is just continuing to grow and grow and grow. And you look at something like Senua's Hellblade. I mean, Senua's number two. The teeth and the gums in that trailer look so realistic. Like, a dentist could work on that virtual mouth. Like, it is just crazy to me the style of graphics we're getting into. And again, that was not in-game. That's not playable graphics. That's in-engine that the trailer was made. But at the same point, just the level of graphics that we're getting to is almost scary how realistic it is.
Yeah, I can remember, like, one of the biggest graphical jumps in the history of gaming was the original PlayStation to PlayStation 2. The original PlayStation still had like pixelated characters. Like, you could see, like, it wasn't a round smooth face. Like, you wouldn't be able to look at an athlete in game and tell which athlete it was without looking at the number on the back of their jersey. When PlayStation 2 came out and I played Madden on it, or I believe Metal Gear Solid 2 was a launch title, the graphics on it blew my mind. I remember my parents being like, wait, are you watching a TV show? I'm like, no, I'm playing a video game. Now you go back to look at PlayStation 2 graphics compared to now, you're like, how did we ever play this as a kid? Like, this is awful. This console is garbage. And now we're seeing graphics like this that it's like, you honestly have to think, is this real or is this an in-game graphic? Is this a graphic built off of a very impressive engine for a video game? It's really cool. And Joey, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's really scary at the same time.
Absolutely. Just to hit on something we hit on last week, but to remind you guys, the Fortnite Winter Royale for 2019 is happening December 20th through the 22nd. So that is this upcoming weekend. On top of that, John, about a month later, we see the return of the LCS and the LEC, the League of Legends scene for North America and Europe. That's going to be the weekend of January 25th. John, I don't know about you, but I'm very happy to see them both starting on the same weekend again. I feel like this last year with them being like 2 weeks apart was super awkward, and it led to different splits, and then the standings were all funky, and our week analysis was just all over the place because they just continued to be on different weeks, and some were in playoffs, and others were still in regular season, and then Reckless is on vacation, and it was just all over the place. So I'm glad to see everyone realigned over here as well.
Yeah, it'll be nice to, especially for us at the show, be like, all right, now in week 8 in the LEC, but week 4 in the LCS, week 6 in the LCK, week 1 in the Brazilian League? It's all over the place. I'm glad it's back together.
And then speaking of back together, Rocket League's championship. Once again, we see Energy making their way here. Energy takes down Renault Vitality in Game 7 of the Rocket League Championship Series. John, what did we attend? The Worlds for Season 4?
Season 4.
Yeah, Season 4. That was here at the MGM National Harbor in Washington, D.C. area. We went to that. It was a very electric, very fun atmosphere. But the Rocket League scene just continues to grow, John. This is one of those scenes, and I think the developer itself, like the way Psyonix or Epic or whoever runs the esports scene in general, needs to make some improvements. I want to be able to see a team almost every week. I don't want like 5 teams playing each week or 6 teams, and they leave certain teams off for a couple weeks, and then they return, and it's just, it feels like an awkward scheduling as far as the leagues go. But as far as the World Championship goes, they seem to knock it out of the park every year. This one in particular peaked at nearly 300,000 viewers. That's the highest they've achieved for a World Championship yet for Rocket League. On top of that, John, the boy we saw win the Season 4 Championship, Turbo Pulsa, he's back again, and he won for Season 7.
Jeez, what is this, like Title 5 for him?
It's got to be 4 or 5 at least. I feel like he was a 3 or 4 time when we saw him.
Yeah, like this dude is insane in Rocket League. And you know, regardless of who you put him with, still performs at crazy high levels. He is an absolute stud in the Rocket League scene. You know, good on for Turbo. You know, there's a lot of up and coming talent in the Rocket League scene. It's a fast growing scene. You know, you saw a lot of esport commentators over the weekend, Slasher for one. You know, a lot of people still scratching their heads. How is Rocket League not a tier one esport yet? You know, I mean, Joey, if we turn back the clock, you know, several years, you know, prior to even us launching the Level Up podcast, we had this conversation, like when Overwatch was being teased, you know, what is going to have a bigger impact on esports, Rocket League or Overwatch? What's going to be the next big thing? And common sense would tell you it would have been Rocket League. You know, Rocket League has that potential to grasp that traditional sports fan and kind of bring them into the esport realm, because Rocket League is essentially soccer with RC cars. It's very easy to follow. It's easy to understand. And it'd be easy for people to acclimate to the esport universe through Rocket League versus Overwatch. But Overwatch has that more, has that typical esport video game feel that video game fans know and love, and the community was going to embrace it probably a little bit more than something as simplistic, if you will, even though Rocket League is not simplistic, you know, as Rocket League. And it's just insane to see how far Rocket League has come from how low it was when it started. Not low in a bad sense, but just how, like, less publicity it got, the small amount of viewers, the small sponsors, you know, going from, like Joey, you know, Season 4, the MGM Grand, or not Grand, the MGM National Harbor, you know, auditorium sat 4,000 people. Now we're talking arenas, we're talking massive concert halls of 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 people coming to Rocket League events. You know, it's not quite where League of Legends is. You know, selling out 20,000, 25,000, or even 75,000 seat arenas like they do in South Korea and China. But it's growing, and it's slowly growing. And I think the golden age of Rocket League becoming a tier one esport is right around the corner now.
A lot of things to hit on here. One, Rocket League just released on China this year, I believe. I believe it went free to play in China. It had its full release via Tencent over there. So the fact that you're moving into China is a huge, huge market share growth over there. Two, when you look at the game itself, like I said, the week-by-week format, if you're going to do a weekly format in a league, let every team play every week. Maybe they can have one bye week here and there, but when I'm a Cloud9 fan watching Rocket League, for this example, let's say I want to watch Cloud9 play, and they don't play for 3 weeks because they're on a bye or whatever it is because the scheduling, that's just dumb. You lose your investment. You lose the people interested in the sport, or the esport in this case. Like, if I can't watch my team for 3 weeks, am I that invested in the scene, or am I watching because I like my team in the scene? I think they lose a lot of viewership and a lot of people that might potentially not come back as regularly because of the fact that their teams don't play on a week-by-week basis. It's hard to follow the standings because of it. It's hard to stay engaged if you're a fan of a certain team. I think that is a huge, huge dagger in the way that they run their esports scene. 3, Nate Nancer from the Overwatch League is now the head of esports at Epic Games. The guy who talked people into paying $25 to $60 million for spots in the Overwatch League is now over at Epic Games. So the amount of things that he could potentially do with the relationships he made with the Overwatch League, the ability he had in forming that league and building it from the ground up, can now be distributed into a league that already has some kind of a foundation in Rocket League, and he can make improvements to it. He can potentially franchise it. There's a lot of different ways that could go as well. The other thing I think is the strategic aspect. When you look at League of Legends, when you look at Overwatch, there's a lot of strategy that goes in based on picks, based on the way the map is laid out, based on the comps you play. Rocket League doesn't necessarily have that. The car you choose is not really going to vary that much between games. That's a big, I would almost say, disclaimer in a sense compared to the normal esports scene. If you're a hardcore esports player, maybe that is what attracts you less to that scene. But if you're that casual sport person trying to jump into esports, it's a much more attractive title because of that same aspect, as well as the fact that it's pretty simplistic. I mean, there's two goals. You put the ball in the goal, you get a point. So I think it has pluses and minuses when you look at the game itself. But overall, the biggest thing for me is the scheduling. No matter if you're a sports fan, an esports fan, a snail racing fan, you want to see your team win. You want to see your team on a regular basis. Let that snail cross the finish line. Let me see my team every week. Give them one or two buys. I don't want to go 2 or 3 weeks without seeing my team play. I think that's the biggest issue for the scene right now. Okay, John, I think we got to send you back to the workshop. I think this is about the end of the episode. You have toys to make. Christmas is right around the corner here at the Level Up Podcast.
Why do I have to go back to work? I'm done with work. I don't want to work anymore.
You're the one wearing the elf hat, sir.
This is true. I am wearing the elf hat. That is very true. Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get exclusive content to nobody that nobody else in the world can get unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. My goodness. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Shoot us a comment on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, or SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to interact with us and the show. Joey, without making any mistakes, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us in the show?
Level Up Nation, nobody and everybody are welcome to go check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook. That is at the Level Up Podcast, the LVLUP Podcast. In addition to that, we stream regularly on Twitch, twitch.tv/OTN_live. This podcast, the Level Up Podcast, records Monday nights around 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time. Check us out.
All right, just a little housekeeping before we go. Next week, December 23rd, we will be off for the holiday. We'll be back on Monday, December 30th to cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. So do your ears a favor and hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We hope you all have a wonderful holiday season. Remember to be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
Level up.